Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Hi, this is Dr. Andy Barlow with the Chiropractic Physician Center of Tupelo and author of the number one best-selling book, The Codebreaker. Are you sick and tired of being sick and tired? Then call my office at 662-844-1414 and order my new book, The Codebreaker.
You're listening to the Rebel Report podcast, where it's all Ole Miss all the time. Here's your host, Michael Borky.
What is up, everybody? Welcome in on this Sunday night to Rebel Report Live. My name is Michael Borky. Appreciate you being here. So, as the technical difficulties world turns for me, as I right as I was getting ready to get set up and get started, I realized that my wireless mouse is out of battery, and it's not chargeable. It is AAA batteries, and I don't have any. So, I mean, it's just a world of embarrassing thing after embarrassing thing for me, but that's okay. We're here. We're live. I'm glad that you are here. We're talking about a few things. One, the lead is Ole Miss had three players drafted in this year's draft. You know who they are and where they're going, but we'll talk about that as well. But I'm here to tell you why 2025 will be, I said could be, but it will be the biggest draft in Ole Miss football history, both in volume of players and scale and scope of the program. Also, baseball lost another series. They bounced back in game two, but got embarrassed yesterday for another rather embarrassing series loss. And now the conversation is continuing to evolve when it comes to Ole Miss baseball. So if you guys want to talk about that, we certainly will. We don't have to. I'll let the chat decide that. I know that, frankly, baseball is just not everybody's happy topic right now, and most people just want to talk about coaching change. We will do that. We have to do that. We should do that. But that will be last on this edition of Rebel Report Live. Again, my name is Michael Borky. Follow me, social media, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, at Michael Borky, B-O-R-K-E-Y. And wherever you get your podcast, if you're listening to this on the website at supertalk.fm, we appreciate you checking out the website. We're glad that you're here. But what we would rather you do is hop on over to your favorite podcast app, search Rebel Report, subscribe and leave a rating and a review. So, three players for Ole Miss, and look, I reached for the mouse, even though there's no battery. Comedy of errors is this live stream, but that's okay. Three Ole Miss players selected, all of which on day three. Dontre Prince went to Jacksonville in the fifth round. He was obviously the first Ole Miss player taken off the board. Not surprising, by the way, that there weren't really all that many draft picks for Ole Miss this year. That's kind of the point of this conversation is they were as good as they were a year ago, and they really don't lose much. That's really kind of the point of everything that everybody's talking about with Ole Miss this offseason is pointing to 24 and not pointing back to 23. But still, Prince, good player for Ole Miss, good spot for him in Jacksonville as well. Cedric Johnson went to Cincinnati in the sixth, and so did Dijon Anthony. Went to Cincinnati in the seventh round. So, again, I think Prince is a guy that had a really nice college career. As you can tell by his draft selection, wasn't like this super outstanding, like, lockdown player that was just unbelievable, but really good college career. Has a chance to make the team there in Jacksonville and have some nice time as a pro. Needs to be a willing special teamer for sure. If he's going to make that team. But really good college player. Ole Miss fans do and should look back on his career positively. I think so, and I think he will make that roster. Cedric Johnson's a little bit more interesting to me because the measurables were there, and he tested well, and he senior bowled well. And we saw that on the field, but just for whatever reason was not near as productive as people thought that he could be at Ole Miss. Interesting spot there at Cincinnati because Trey Hendrickson just asked for a trade. I don't know what Cincinnati's plans for him are moving forward. Trey Hendrickson, a true pass rusher, one of the better ones in the NFL, very underrated player around the league. So he's on his way out, or at least he's asking for his way out. So it could be an opportunity to make the roster there and be on the 53 as Cincinnati tries, or I don't know if they're going to deal him or not. Maybe they work it out. I don't know, but he has asked for a trade there. And then Anthony is one of those guys that I thought, even though his Ole Miss career was very, very short, he's the kind of guy that when people say that it's hard to like fall in love with portal players, that fans aren't loyal to transfer portal players, he's one of those guys that, and it's not like he was a superstar on this team either. Like he's not Jackson Dart. Don't get me wrong. It's a little bit different when he was essentially a one-year rental. But with Anthony, one, he was a good player, played well on a good team. That helps. Seems like a good dude, represented Ole Miss well and all of that. But he was also part of a hit, one of the biggest plays, if not the biggest play, of the win of the season last year, where he knocked the you-know-what out of the number two overall pick at quarterback in what was probably the loudest that Vaught-Hemingway Stadium's ever been when fans realized the ball came out in that hit. And so he will forever be etched into Ole Miss lore, even though he was a transfer guy for only 1 year. So if you come in and you work hard and you make plays, the fans are going to love you. Just like if he'd have come in 3 years ago or just 1 year, people are going to look back at Anthony's one-year career at Ole Miss very fondly, and they will always remember when the state, when 65,000 people in unison pointed and screamed ball when he, again, knocked Daniels the way he did. So happy to see him get drafted. It was a really good portal evaluation from Ole Miss, and I think he's got a chance to make a roster as well, at least be a practice squad guy. All three of these guys have a chance to make their roster. As you know, the later you get picked in the draft, it's more difficult. But because they got picked, the propensity for teams to keep their draft picks, that they are more likely to keep their draft picks because they spent more capital on them than a UDFA. So hopefully they all make it. They all, I mean, when you look at them represented, I think really represented Ole Miss well. And obviously you wish them the best of luck and hope they have great professional careers. So what I'm about to say is not taking away from them and all the other UDFAs, like Dayton Wade in Baltimore. I thought it's a really good spot for him. If he wasn't going to get picked, I think Baltimore is a good place for him to end up, for example. So, good things happened to Ole Miss players this weekend. But this was an underwhelming draft because it should have been. Very few players for Ole Miss were available to get selected anyway. In terms of like real impact players from last year's team, because as I just said, they're all coming back and everything's pointing to 2024 and the 2025 draft. That will be the conclusion of what is the most anticipated season in modern Ole Miss football history. And 2025 will be, even if the team underachieves, the biggest draft in the history of Ole Miss football. And the only other, you could point back to the Eli draft because of where he got selected, but the volume of players from this coming Ole Miss team that will get picked next year will break an Ole Miss record. I would put my car on that. I would guarantee that. But the first-round potential could match that Kimdichie Treadwell-Tunsil year, and knock on wood, it goes differently because even though Ole Miss had three first-round picks that night, and that was a big night for the program, there was the stuff that happened. There was the cloud, all because an absolute loser tried to ruin Laramie Tunsil's career on the biggest night of his life. Very unsuccessfully, by the way, because Laramie Tunsil, as you guys know, one of the best tackles in the league, making a ton of money on a really good team, heavily involved in charity work. Everybody really likes him. Wonder what the guy that tried to sabotage him is up to now. Probably not doing what Laramie's doing, but that night, that big night for Ole Miss was completely destroyed. And again, knock on wood, something similar doesn't happen, which you can't foresee. But next year's draft, this time next year, I mean, we will cover it differently on the radio show. We will certainly cover it here differently. I mean, it's in Green Bay, but if they become what they're supposed to be, it might be a good idea to staff the event and send myself up there to go cover it, because not only is Jackson Dart leaving, although I think that he's got some climbing to do to be the possible first round pick, but Daniels went number two overall going into last season. Did anybody talk about him going to number two overall? Absolutely not. Bo Nix and Michael Penix got drafted in the top 12. I mean, six quarterbacks went in the first 12 picks. Now, you know, maybe that's an indicator of what teams think of next year's draft, but there's a lot of time for Jackson Dart to change his standing when it comes to being that guy. But you've got Walter Nolan, who people think can play his way into being a first-round pick. Princely, if he has a good, healthy season. Rush Ends, man. I mean, he could be one of those guys. Trey Amos could be one of those guys. I know McKinstry went the second round of the Saints, which is a great pick, and he was McKinstry's backup, but he was going to step up and start, and when he did play for Alabama, he looked like a guy that could be an early-round pick for sure. I mean, Trey Harris, I don't know what his speed numbers are going to be like, but with another good season, he could be that guy. You guys are getting my point now. The two Washington offensive linemen, any of Ole Miss's offensive linemen could play their way into being that. I think could play their way into that. Now, the interior guys aren't as valuable as the tackles, of course, but still, you hear what I'm getting at. There are a number of guys that, you know, with improvement or with increased projection, could be first-round picks next year. And even if they all don't pan out exactly that way, the sheer number of Ole Miss players that are going to get picked in next year's draft is going to be a program record, and it will be the biggest draft in the history of Ole Miss football. So this weekend was tame. You're very happy for the guys that got picked. But now that this draft is over, the 2023 season's officially done, right? Everything now about last year is gone. Players were drafted, signed their UDFA deals, and now everything is forward-focusing into the biggest season in modern Ole Miss football history, with the most hype and the most attention and the most pressure. And now that we are officially, boom, like, here it is, all full speed ahead, let's go forward with this season. I am incredibly intrigued as to how Lane Kiffin handles this and how he coaches through it, how Jackson Dart handles it, how the aforementioned Nolan and Princely and Harris and those guys, how they blossom into possible NFL draft picks. I am truly excited to talk about this team and this program with you guys for the next 12 months, because the next 12 months are going to be, I think, are going to be incredibly exciting for you. The season's going to be hype-filled and pressure-filled, and the postseason is going to be the same way. I missed looking at, you know, where certain players could go early, with all due respect to these guys. I'm really excited to do this past week, a lot differently next year. So really looking forward to that. It will be huge. Baseball, look, they lost another series. Everything that I said on Thursday night after the first game still applies right now. They're not just losing games. They are getting embarrassed most of the time in these games. They're getting run ruled. They're getting beaten badly. And that distinction matters, in my opinion, and it matters a lot. Because if they were losing close games, if they were competitive, if they were playing sharp, they were just getting beat, you could spin it as, well, hey, Hunter Elliott and Rivas got hurt. You know, it just, and that's just bad injury luck, or they're just a player or two away from being really good, but they fight, they're competitive, there's something to buy. But when you are getting embarrassed the way this team is getting embarrassed, it means that, frankly, there's nothing to buy. It is, they are uncompetitive. They play very poor baseball. And, you know, sometimes when you play bad, it looks like you're giving poor effort, but it looks like this team, when they get punched once, they quit. And I know what happened Friday, and you get my point, though. You guys have seen it, too. They let one error turn into two and three and four. They're bad in the field. They're bad situationally. They're bad on the mound. Everything is bad. And that distinction, I think it needs to be discussed strongly, because there is a difference between a down year on a team that is working hard and playing hard and they're just getting beat, and a down year on a team that looks like they don't give a crap and they play like they don't. And when one mistake happens or they get down early, they lay down, that can't do routine baseball things, that get embarrassed regularly. It would be very hard if I were in your position, you guys buying the tickets and putting your emotion and your finances into a program, I wouldn't buy myself. I wouldn't. It is, they are embarrassing. And with the financial input into the program, both from the university level and I know that they don't have the biggest NIL in college baseball, and people are debating that now. And that to me is absurd. It is absurd that there are a very small amount of people that are trying to paint they don't have enough NIL money. That is an absurd thing to do, because lacking funds is not why they look as bad as they do. Do a small handful of other teams in college baseball spend more than they do? Yes. But there are dozens and dozens of teams in college baseball that are a hell of a lot better than them that don't spend the way they do. I think it's a bad excuse, and frankly, I'm not going to entertain it. They are, they're embarrassing. They play embarrassing baseball, and the conversation as a result is different than it would be if they were losing close. So we'll get to your comments after I tell you the podcast is brought to you by Advantage Business Systems. Check them out online, absms.com. That is the website if your Mississippi business is in the market for office technology, anything from copiers and printers, mail machines to cloud storage, data security, IT projects, phone systems, whatever it is. If it's technology, if it's in the office and your Mississippi business needs it, check them out again online, absms.com. Tell them I sent you. You'll get a complimentary office technology assessment. So you tell them what you need and what your budget is, and they will find a solution for you on me. That's Advantage Business Systems, absms.com. Podcast is also brought to you by Priority One Bank. Let them make you their priority. We've got 16 locations here in Mississippi, so there's likely one in your backyard. Their fraud detection is pretty great, because I got informed that my account was compromised, and somebody did like a test purchase to see if it would go through, and it did go through. So they caught that rather quickly, because they make me their priority, and they will do the same for you. Priority One Bank, making you their priority. Sorry, having an allergy attack here. All good. Best part about this weekend series was it ending on Saturday, so double-decker could be enjoyed. That about sums up the way Ole Miss fans talk. Or excuse me, the way they think right now. Trey Harris and Walter Nolan should be the first rounders. I wonder what Dart's potential could be. My guess is he's more likely to be a second to third round guy. That's my guess. Although there is a kind of a false narrative around some Ole Miss people about his deep ball passing. Now, don't get me wrong. He's not the best at it. There are better at it. But when you look at the numbers and his completion percentage and accuracy on balls thrown down the field, he has good numbers. So this idea that he's bad at it, like his deep ball sucks, or it's just not rooted in reality. The numbers tell you a different story about how accurate he has thrown the football vertically. He can improve that. I think he's got some limitation in arm strength. But, I mean, I think that he very well could be somebody that slides up with a healthy season and a team that wins a bunch of games. I mean, if J.J. McCarthy was on an 8-4 Michigan team instead of the national champion Michigan team, had the exact same numbers, played the exact same way, but his team lost fewer games, would he have moved up the draft board like that? I don't think so. So, it's up to Jackson. He's got to be a little bit sharper at times. You know, frankly, if he just plays to his capability and stays healthy this season, I think he will shoot up boards. He is physically gifted. The measurables are fine. Like, they're not going to just jump off the page at you, but they're certainly fine. He's athletic, can move around well. can improve some things as a passer, but certainly cut down on stupid mistakes from 1 year to the next. Got to use the middle of the field a little bit more. But my guess would be second, third round guy, probably. Harris Walter and Princely go first round. Dart has a chance to move up as well as Juice Wells. I think that I'm not sure that Harris is a first round guy. I could be wrong. Now, I think that he's going to be another one of those Ole Miss receivers that gets drafted after the first round, and you look up and think, how the hell did he drop out of the first round? But I part of me wonders if separation might hinder him a little bit when comes time. Interested to see Chris Paul's draft potential. So if Nathaniel Watts, maybe they're different players, I don't know, but like Nathaniel Watson was an All-American linebacker at Mississippi State, highly, highly productive, like elite-level linebacker this season, and he got picked in the sixth round. Linebacker, for whatever reason, is not exactly a position that is a premium. And, you know, as a result, with a really, really, really good season, he could still, you know, fall to late in the draft or even be a UDFA. It's different now. I mean, to use another Mississippi State player, because I know that's what you guys are asking for, is my thoughts on state players. But, like, Watson goes in the sixth round. He's elite. Jet Johnson, highly productive. I wouldn't call elite, but really productive, doesn't get drafted. Willie Gay signed with the Saints for $5 million, one-year deal. Linebacker is just not a position that is looked at a premium anymore, I don't think. It doesn't look like it anyway. So that could hinder him some, kind of like the running backs of the defense in a way. You're declaring the season officially over now at 7-14. LSU will overtake Ole Miss soon, and I think Missouri passes them as well, and Ole Miss misses Hoover again, 9-21, my predicted finish. Yeah, the schedule is getting a little bit easier. So maybe they pick up a couple more wins. But, yeah, I'm not going to entertain the here's their path to the postseason conversation anymore. I mean, they've got to sweep next weekend before I can get back to, okay, yeah, here's their path. Which I don't think that they're capable of, but I'm not going to spend any time this week at all entertaining the here's their path conversation. I'm not doing it. They do not deserve the benefit of the doubt until they prove it. I know what happened in 2022. Frankly, 2022 is the only reason why I had any reluctance going into this week, but I'm not going to do it until they prove otherwise. They are, yeah, not going to do it. You've heard Dart has put some, quote, not great weight on post-surgery that he'll have to lose come G1 kickoff. Well, luckily it's April. He didn't look like overweight messing around in the spring game. I didn't necessarily think that like there was some kind of problem on their hands, but it's April. It'll be fine. If he does have to lose weight, he's got plenty of time to do so. So don't worry about that. Anthony will always be remembered for the monster hit on Jaden Daniels. I love the edits that have the sonic rings popping out of Daniels when he's hit. I mean, seriously, I know most of this audience is younger. Like, our radio audience is much older than the podcast audience. I mean, much older. So if I asked this question on the show, we'd get a lot of different answers. But for you guys, I mean, that hit on Daniels in the moment, and like, not only the hit and like who it was and what that game became and all that, but like even the visuals, you know, like the sun setting, but you have like the golden hour, like the daylight is beautiful and like the uniform matchup is all like everything about that hit is perfect, like college football. But you can hear the stadium in unison scream ball because when the hit initially happened, you couldn't see the ball pop out. So everybody got excited for the hit and it was like, hit, roar, ball. It's awesome. I mean, it's just a really cool moment. And so where does that fall on your guys' list of like favorite Ole Miss football moments? It's not going to be number one or anything, but I bet when you ask this audience, which is skews younger, that one's going to be up there for a lot of you guys, and it should be. I mean, what a huge play. And now that Daniels is the number two overall pick, Heisman Trophy winner, right? And LSU being the rival and everything I mentioned before, that's got to be up there. Even if he put on weight, he's coming off of surgery and has all summer to get in top shape, he'll be fine. Jordan Watkins could have some draft potential. Certainly. Certainly could. Not, you know, early round, but certainly could. Run good routes and catch the ball. If you do that, you have a home in the NFL. Do you run good routes? Do you run the correct routes? Do you catch the ball when it's thrown to you? If those answers are yes, you will have a home. Somebody will find a place for you in the NFL, for sure. What do I think of Beard's class thus far, and are they done? I don't think they're done. Now, I would not be surprised if, like, the next player or two they add is not as, like, high quality, quote-unquote, as the ones that they've signed, because there are, you know, there's not many spots to go around. Brakefield also coming back. I mean, there's only so many minutes to play. It's 40 minutes in a game. So I don't think they're done, but I am extremely impressed with what they've gotten. There's a clear type, if you will. They've got bigs with offensive skill that can score the basketball, that have face-up games, that can step outside and shoot the basketball. They've got big guards that are willing defenders that can still make outside shots. They appear to be pretty deep. You know, it's all on paper. They've got to acclimate, but you could not be possibly you shouldn't be anything other than really impressed by it, for sure. Any word on how Keelon Russell's official visit went? Heard some good things. Visits always go well. Almost always go well. Laquan Treadwell's visit to Oklahoma State did not go well, but usually visits go really, really well. Can I be honest with you? And I know I shouldn't admit this because of what my job is, but I am so not moved by high school quarterback recruiting because I am incapable of multitasking. And when we're talking about a high school quarterback that at best we won't see until 2026, I don't know. I know that's bad. I should admit that. I should be all over everything involving Ole Miss because, you know, I cover it. But I'm sure it went well. It'll be a good pickup if they get him. But I am far more interested in this season, and then if Kiffin is content with Howard and Simmons. And by the way, you know, no official word on the Simmons injury, but Bianco's quote Friday did not exactly give you the warm and fuzzies. And I'm far more like curious about that than I am a high school recruit. I know that's bad. Harris will be the next early second round wide receiver out of Ole Miss to terrorize the NFL. You know, it's funny. I actually tweeted that exact thing during the Texas A&M game. Yeah. And Connor, if it's, I think it's you, right? You in the landscaping business, I need help with something. Send me a DM on Twitter if you've got it. If not, send me an email, borky12@gmail.com. I know this is weird to do live, but it was you that owns the landscaping business. I need help with something. So please reach out because I want to possibly hire you to help me with something. Was Jordan Travis drafted? He ended up with the Jets, right? Let me make sure I'm right on that. Yes, he ended up with the Jets. He was a fifth-round pick, number 171, with the Jets this year. So all the talent on the team and returners, plus a great staff. This team should win a playoff game if they play in the first round. I'd take them against any non-SEC team, maybe except Ohio State. Yeah, Ohio State's going to be really good. I know a lot of people want to see that matchup just because of Judkins and whatnot, but I think Ohio State's probably going to win the national championship this year. As much as people hate that, But yeah, I'm with you. I like this team's talent to match up with pretty much anybody that's not Georgia. I think Georgia still has the deepest roster in all of college football. You know, Texas would be a difficult matchup if they put SEC on SEC. But I would like this roster to stack up against Florida State, Clemson, Oregon. I would like it to stack up against pretty much anybody. I mean, on paper, this is where they are, for sure. Will it mesh? We'll see. But on paper, it's where they are. On baseball season, over predicting tops three conference wins left in the schedule, should reserve a U-Haul to show up at Swayze for mid-June for an office clear out. I don't know this. I am purely speculating. But the way they're losing, there's no doubt the way they're losing changes the conversation. It changes. But here's the thing. I've seen too many people say, well, it's only $4 million. I've seen too many people say that. That would be the buyout number. It'd be north of $4 million. Well, it's just $4 million. Keith Carter is maximizing every dollar that they possibly can for football and men's basketball. There isn't just $4 million laying around to pay a baseball coach's buyout. It's just not. People think that athletic department money just grows on trees and that it's just everywhere and that Keith Carter can just walk up to the tree and pluck $4 million off and just hand it to Mike Bianco to go away. That's not the case. There is a finite amount of money available, and they are stretching to give football and basketball everything they possibly can. The only way, in my opinion, I have not talked to Keith Carter about this. The only way that a change happens is if new money arrives. That's the only way, because I do not think that, and I wouldn't walk away from $4 million. So I wouldn't expect Mike Bianco to do the same, should it come to that. Maybe they agree to a reduced buyout with like a job in the department or something. I don't know. But I think that nothing's going to happen unless new money shows up for this purpose and this purpose only. Losing the way they're losing can inspire people in ways that maybe it doesn't. Any word on the DB or safety that came from Michigan? Is he leaving? Yes, he is. Amorian Walker, who was quickly in and quickly out, is leaving. I have been told that spring didn't – he didn't – like – he wasn't going to start, at least not right away. Now, they need the depth. They need the athleticism. They're probably back in the defensive back market, but I don't believe that it was looking as good as they hoped it would through just a couple of weeks in spring. I could be wrong. I could be wrong about that. I think that that is part of what's going on here, at least part of it. Gaddian Walton should have been drafted. But that goes to show you, Barbara, how difficult it is to get in the NFL. How many times did I say Ole Miss is in this broadcast right now? Deals and everything is focusing into the biggest season. No, he entered. Yeah, no, Brandon's right. He entered. He is in the portal as per on three. He entered yesterday, I believe, is what they're saying. Yep, for 4:27. So let's say Ole Miss goes 11-1. Tell me who they lose to. Now, on the other side, let's say things get sideways and the pressure caves and they lose three or four games. Who do they lose to there? Okay. So 11-1, the losses to Georgia at home. Because I think Georgia and Ohio State have the best rosters in college football. Sidebar. One of my best friends in the world is getting married. Ole Miss graduate, by the way. Almost everybody involved in the wedding has ties to Ole Miss. Not everybody, but almost everybody. They are getting married in Nashville the weekend Georgia is in Oxford. Yep, that is happening. Am I mad? Yes. Do I still have to go because I'm in it and all that stuff? Yes, I still have to go, and I'm going to pretend like I am not going to be looking at my phone every 5 seconds if the game is going on during the wedding. What an idiot. What an idiot. But anyway, so I will not be at that game covering that game like I would have had that idiot not been getting married that weekend. But anyway, so 11-1, the loss would be to Georgia. If it's 9-3 or 8-4, Georgia, LSU, Oklahoma, maybe at Florida, or maybe at South Carolina. I mean, I don't think they're losing to Mississippi State. I don't think they're losing to Arkansas. So those would be most likely. Maybe Kentucky at home. If they're losing four games, maybe that's one of them as well. Yeah, faith in this team, but saw 2009 and the gaffes in 14 and 15. This team should break those historical trends. Yeah, I have more faith in this team because of who's coaching it versus who is coaching those teams. I mean, we're talking about Houston Nutt and Hugh Freeze. And while Hugh Freeze, I think, is a better football coach than Houston Nutt by a pretty significant margin, Hugh Freeze often got in his own way, far too often got in his own way. And frankly, there is one game at Ole Miss where I thought Lane Kiffin truly... Okay, well, the Egg Bowl 2 in 2022. But that Arkansas game was the only one that they showed up and played like crap and got beat by a team they shouldn't have gotten beat by that wasn't on their level playing field, and you can place the blame at the feet of the coaching. That's over 4 years. They beat the teams they're supposed to beat under Lane Kiffin. They do. He's been really good at that. His teams have been prepared to play. They haven't had the Memphis like with Hugh Freeze, or just like the gaffes that his teams had had, and some weeks the lack of preparedness, or you know, like that LSU game, trying to win it 7-3, things like that. And then Houston, not totally different story. I think that Kiffin is just much better prepared for this than the two of those guys were. Saw my interview. Yeah. Thanks, Tim. Enjoyed that. Baseball team is 15 players away from a good team, something like that. Needs a complete reset, but you like Will Furness, though? Yeah, he's been good. He's been good in conference play. So, at this point, they would be better offering you a baseball roster spot. You could field better than a lot of those guys. Longtime listener, first time to catch you live on YouTube. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate you being here. Glad that you're here, man. They'll be lacking funds next year. Yeah, it. That's the conundrum that they face, right? That's what makes this so difficult for Keith Carter. People think this is an easy decision. It's not an easy decision because, like I said before, there's a finite amount of money available. But because of how important baseball is to the fabric of Ole Miss athletics and the university, you can't let it continue like this. But it's also just not a regular coach either. It's the guy that built the program and won you a championship. It's not just some dude that you hired a few years ago. It's not like that. This is a very unique situation because coaches don't stay at schools for two decades plus, right? It's extremely difficult to navigate this. You also are going to have people that are, for right, wrong, or indifferent, that are giving to baseball NIL that are loyal to Mike Bianco. You'll have to get that back. Now, I think a new coach could very easily get the loyalists back on board because at the end of the day, they're not really loyal to the coach. They're loyal to the school. And, you know, you can mend those fences. When Matt Luke got fired, half the football team walked out of the team meeting. And guess what? Everything was fine. Okay, people are emotional during emotional times, and then they calm down and get back to normal. But there are people that if Ole Miss were to move on from Mike Bianco, would threaten to take away all of their money. There are people that would do that. I don't know how many, but I know for a fact there are some. And how much new money would come with a new coach? I don't know the answer to that, because basketball is getting new money. Football is getting new money. It's all new in this era, but still, would baseball, with the change, get new money? And how much would they lose if they don't? Those are the kind of things that Keith Carter's going to have to balance and figure out as they try to enter a year where football and basketball is all in. It's a lot more difficult than people are giving it credit for. The only way you see Bianco being back is if they're unable to get enough extra money from the boosters to fire him, or meet in the middle and convince him to retire or resign. Yeah, that's where I am on that, I think. It's odd how they look competent in one game and completely lost in the other two. It is odd. It is odd, but isn't that what bad teams do? Isn't that what they do? Talented but bad teams? They're talented. I don't want to hear that they're not talented. I don't buy that either, though. Oh, they just don't have enough talent. I don't buy that. I think that's crap. I think they do have talent. Maybe they've misevaluated in some spots. Sure. Haven't developed correctly in others. Sure. But they are completely void of talent, I think, is not true either. So I think at times they show what they could be, but more often they show you what they actually are. Does that make sense? I don't know if I said that correctly. We're on the same page, though. Thoughts on the QB1 show apparently negatively affecting Spencer Rattler with NFL teams? Yeah, if what Ian Rappaport said was true, that teams were afraid of Spencer Rattler because of a reality show that was filmed when he was in high school, that's so stupid. I mean, that's overanalyzing to the 10th degree, because, you know, he looked like crap. I don't know if you guys ever watched that show, but he looked like, forgive my language, earmuffs, everybody, he looked like an asshole. Bad teammate. That's what he looked like. It's really bad. But when I was 17, I was an asshole, you know? Again, forgive my language, please. But I was a jerk when I was 17. I would like to think that I've grown up. He grew up too. And he blossomed into a really mature player if you go back and watch the way he handled being on a pathetic football team for a couple years at South Carolina. He was good there. He's a great value pick for the Saints in the fifth round. Great value pick. Really talented. Took him a while to kind of figure it out, but he grew up and really handled himself well at South Carolina. A guy with a lesser mental makeup would not have handled South Carolina the way Spencer Rattler did. I was really impressed by him this past season especially. And I'm happy that he's on the Saints. I think that he can help them if Derek Carr were to get hurt. And I think that there's a chance that he could be. And again, we're talking a fifth-round quarterback, so chance, could, are operative words. But there's a chance that he could be a guy that sees starts in this league. He's talented enough to do it and grew up. It's absurd that something that he was filmed doing in high school directly impacted him this weekend. But what you've read about Dart's draft stock is that NFL scouts question the speed of his decision-making and that the deep ball is a concern, but he is plain nails, so that buys him some higher draft level. The decision-making and reading defenses is really interesting to me. And that's something that you can really improve on. That's not a physical limitation. J.J. McCarthy was a reach. Michigan won, but it wasn't because he carried them. He really did not have to do much to get them to where they are. Hard to throw a lot of deep balls when the offensive line was so bad. Very true. Harris has phenomenal hands, probably doesn't have separation. Reminds you a bit of Laquon Treadwell. Yeah, you know, that's a pretty apt comparison. It's a pretty apt comparison. Teams want to win the line of scrimmage and defend the elite pass catchers, not much in between. Yeah, on the linebacker thing, yeah. See, that's why people thought that the Saints drafting McKinstry was a sign that they were moving on from Lattimore. I disagree. I just, I, And maybe they do, but secondary is now the most, I mean, is that the most important position on the defense now? Because offenses have evolved, and look at like the talent and the speed and the versatility that all these teams have at wide receiver now. You're not just getting by with one defensive back anymore. It won't happen, but at 7-14, again, like 2022, if they make it into the tournament and win it all, can we agree that this is a simulation? Yeah, at that point, I would just give up. I would just give up trying. I wouldn't talk baseball other than like read box scores and just move on, because having a thought on the team at that point would just be a waste of time. The image of the ball loose with Anthony standing over him is your Twitter profile picture, at least until Kiffin hoists the college football playoff trophy. Exactly. That hit was the only time they stopped Daniels the entire night. Sort of. They got three stops in the fourth quarter, and that was all they needed. They got the fourth quarter defense for Ole Miss that night was good. Now the first three, absent that hit, very, very, very bad. But fourth quarter defense that night was good. The only other moments in the season that matched the Anthony hit in noise were the final few plays against LSU and some of the final drive against A&M. The Willis stuff has to be number one. LSU got a first down on that hit, though. I'm way behind on these messages, so I'm going to rapid fire through them and let you guys get out of here. The Anthony hit on Daniels is up there with the back-to-back-to-back home runs in the College World Series. Spring portal window closes. I don't know. Let's see. Spring portal window dates. Let's see. Officially opens on Tuesday, April 16th, and it was 2 weeks. I know that. So April 30th. So, hey, Tuesday. Closes on Tuesday. LSU game itself was probably the loudest and best atmosphere the Vault has had since 2016 Alabama, where they blew the 21-point lead. That was the previous record crowd. What's the deal with Sharp's arrest? As far as I understand it, he shot at somebody. I think there's a rumor going around about exactly why, so I'm going to wait until details come out before I talk about it further, because if one of the rumors is true, then I'd sympathize some, but I don't know if it is, so that's about as far as I'll go. You're nervous about 2025. It screams at our 8-4 type season. That's okay. That's okay. I mean, they lose so much of that roster. Just that would be a building year with a fresh new quarterback. That would be fine. Two underrated moments of the season last year people put off to the side were the big stop, and then the fourth down touchdown pass in the Tulane game, and the final drive against A&M where they had to have a touchdown. Yeah, remember who caught that touchdown in the Tulane game? That was Jackson Dart at his finest, though. On the Simmons injury, saw him Friday night on the field, leading Love is gone, using both arms vigorously. That's a good sign. People forget the Tulane game was hanging in the balance with the Green Wave were driving to win the game under 10 minutes left. Yeah, this score did not reflect how badly Tulane kicked Ole Miss's you-know-what up front that day. AJ Maddox may be better than anyone ever thought. Videos on Twitter look great. Spring game looked great. Yeah, I'm just not going to read into a flag football performance. But yes, he can certainly spin it. There's no doubt about that. You're sure if Ole Miss wins 11 or 12 games this year and Harris has a very good year, he'll be the first Ole Miss wide receiver to sneak in the first round in a while. What I'm curious about is, will he be able to have that kind of dominant year with Watkins and with Wells and with Priestcorn? You know what I mean? They've got so many options that will there be a chance for, paired with how much they're going to run the ball, can Harris have like the 1,300-yard receiving season with the plethora of weapons that they have? Probably, but that's something that I've thought about. Is just you might not have individual eye-popping numbers for Ole Miss because they're so stacked at the skill positions that they're possibly just not going to they're not going to have that dominating year. That doesn't mean they won't have players that are capable of taking over games, but I think you guys get my point there. If all weddings are criminal, you'd be pissed. Yeah, you should. Really? What? Everyone raised in the South knows you don't get married in the fall on a non-bye weekend. I know. And the thing is, when he told me the date, he was like, you're going to be so mad. That's how he prefaced it. He was like, you're going to be mad. Sure enough, I was. The last wedding you went to in Oxford in the fall was when they played at Auburn. The family was mad that you showed up hammered and took over the lyric for the reception, $150 on Fireball. That's what they get. Can't see them losing more than three games with this roster. I can't either, unless it turns into a 2022 type scenario. That's not going to happen this time around, I don't believe. I do not believe it'll go down that way. Even if, for whatever reason, he would leave after this year, I don't think it would go down like that again. 2015 Memphis is unforgivable. Absolutely it is, Barbara. 100%. You don't think Ole Miss was prepared for Arkansas or State in 2022? Definitely not Arkansas. And probably not State either. Although State was so much better than Ole Miss up front that night that it was, you know, that's really about it. Break up with them if they want to get married on a fall Saturday. Something like that. What's the saying? No name is bigger than the brand. That's the coach and team. Got a weird feeling about the Arkansas game in Fayetteville. Imagine if Ole Miss goes out and spanks Oklahoma at a huge home game, prime letdown spot against a desperate program who owns Ole Miss at home. Actually, desperate isn't a good word for Arkansas, more like irrelevant. Yeah. They have been irrelevant for quite some time. I don't even have the respect for this Arkansas team to even think that they could pull off a letdown. So anyway, I got to run, guys. I've got a lot to do tonight. So I appreciate you as always. You guys are the best. And we'll see you on Tuesday night. We'll see you Tuesday night. Thank you guys for tuning in, and we'll see you then.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.